Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Kiss of Death by Heather Hildenbrand, narrated by Chelsea Stevens. Chapter 1. The punk behind me was right on my ass. Adrenaline pumped through me until my magic hummed at the same vibration as the engine's purr. Eyes locked on the pavement ahead, I pressed my foot harder on the gas and let the speed take over. Stress and worry fell away. Problems didn't matter. For this 40 seconds of asphalt, it was just me and the expert piece of machinery I now controlled.
Eat our dust, bitch nuggets.
Okay, me and Gran. Gran, you can't call people bitch nuggets, I said.
Why the hell not?
I don't know, maybe because no one else's grandma makes up weird curse words?
No one else's grandma is a fucking beetle either.
She had a point. Last year, my grandpa Cal had passed away in his sleep. The next morning, overcome by grief, two things had happened to Gran. First, she accidentally shapeshifted into a June bug and lost the ability to shift back. And two, after realizing she was stuck in the body of an insect, she developed a potty mouth worse than a drunken sailor at Mardi Gras. My mother was mortified by Gran's new vocabulary, but I mostly just rolled with it. I'd be pissed too if I couldn't change back to a form that included opposable thumbs. Or any creature whose number one predator wasn't a mole or a prairie dog.
Shit, monkeys, he's gaining on ya, Gran said.
I see it. My gaze slid to the rear view and then back to the road.
Well, Gran said, kick his ass already.
I'm working on it, Gran. Stop distracting me. A buzzing along my outer ear was my only answer.
Hey, I'm trying to drive.
I swatted her away. She huffed and landed on the dashboard again. Just ahead, the road wound sharply left. It was a turn I'd made 1,000 times without so much as a tire over the edge of the pavement. Anticipation built in my stomach, and I held my breath as I whipped the wheel around with one hand. With the other, I gripped the shifter. Tight and loose. It was the mantra Juice had taught me that I now repeated to myself over and over as the street lamps fell away, washing the view ahead in darkness. The only light came from my headlights, and that wasn't much help at this speed. 85. 90. 95. My personal best on this stretch was 101. The highest speed on record was 112, but that guy hadn't made the S-turn. I wasn't interested in beating his record if it meant hydroplaning off the edge of the bulkhead and into the river churning below. My tires hugged the corner as I went into the first of the double turn.
Yee-haw! Gran called.
My vision sharpened, the headlights not quite keeping up with the front end as I whipped expertly around the switchback curve. The cool night air seeped in around me, but my insides were hot, intent on the speed, the precision, and the Jetta coming up on my right.
Jem, this little pissant is making a move, Gran said in warning.
I see it. Asshole thought he could take me on the inside. I snorted, my eyes darting to the mirror that showed his front bumper inching closer. Dumbass was still giving it gas. He'd regret that in about 8 seconds. The second half of the switchback sent my tires screaming. I smiled to myself, knowing full well I'd just kicked up a solid cloud of smoke for my opponent. It also meant I'd need a new set of tires after tonight. Juice was going to go off, but it was worth it. A second later, my fey hearing proved me right. The roar of the Jetta's engine dialed back just enough to let me know he'd eased up.
Hot damn, girl, that's some badass driving, Gran hooted.
My muscle memory had me anticipating the last turn even before I saw it, a benefit of having raced this track so many times before. The Jetta behind me was new. He was holding his own a lot better than I'd expected, but it wouldn't be enough. I knew this course like the back of my hand. Besides all the work Juice and I had done to this baby, that Jetta was no match for my Acura. A sudden shove sent me lurching forward.
What the?
Gran's wings buzzed as she was flung off the dash and barely caught air before being slammed into the window. Outside, the sound of metal crunching had my eyes narrowing. I straightened, eyes darting to the rear mirror. The Jetta had dropped back and was coming in again.
"What in tarnation was that?" Gran demanded.
None of us had the heart to tell her tarnation wasn't a curse word.
"Son of a..."
I trailed off. The jackwad had hit me, on purpose. My car lurched again. This time, I felt my tires drift as the impact set me sliding toward the far edge of the pavement, dangerously close to the drop-off along the river.
"You little prick," I hissed.
Gran's wings beat wildly.
"Oh, that little shit brick is going down."
My fae senses took over, closing the gap between what a human could pull off and what my supernatural abilities allowed. I gripped the gear shift, downshifting as I punched the gas. My back end swung out, kicking up gravel. I fishtailed before catching traction and straightening again. Veering left, I purposely clipped the Jetta's front end as I reclaimed my lead position.
"Watch and learn, you little shit."
"Yeah, watch and learn," Gran echoed. "You're no match for my granddaughter. She's the best in the damn state."
In my mirror, I watched the punk in the Jetta try to keep from losing control. Aw, he could dish it out, but he couldn't take it. I rolled my eyes. Then I slammed my foot against the gas and let my tires eat up the pavement. All that was left was a quarter mile straight away now. I had him. From the cup holder, my phone rang. With one hand still on the wheel, I grabbed it and held it up. The name Vic Hawkins flashed across the screen.
"Shit. Who is it?"
Gran asked.
"Dad." "Ain't nobody got time for that," she said. "We'll call him back after we win. Make him buy us a victory drink."
I decided not to point out Gran couldn't consume more than a raindrop of alcohol without passing out. Instead, I dropped the phone back into the cup holder and eyed the Jetta right on my tail. My breath turned shallow with the need for victory. Just ahead, the finish line was marked on each side by traffic cones Juice had snagged from a construction site nearby. We used whatever markers we could to keep from being noticed out here. Beyond the cones, scantily clad girls stood on a pickup bed, waving their arms at us. The Jetta's engine screamed in response. In my cup holder, my phone pinged with a voicemail. I sucked in a breath, squeezed the wheel, and forced myself not to use magic as my tires soared across the finish line, half a car length in front of the Jetta. Punk.
"Yeah, baby. Fuck all the haters. Suck your mama's teats."
Gran hooted and crowed our victory. Not that any of the humans would pick up the sound. Thank goodness. Some of her insults got a little weird. Pissed at what my opponent had tried out there, I braked hard, pulling to the left so that the front end whipped around in a tight U-turn. I slid to a stop, not even caring that I'd probably just stripped the remaining tread from my tires, and jumped out. Gran started to follow, but I moved fast, not wanting to deal with her buzzing in my ear, or worse, buzzing in someone else's. All it took was one well-placed hand swat, and Gran was toast. I couldn't have that kind of guilt on my conscience. Slamming the door behind me, I shoved past the well-wishers all hooting and cheering my victory. Several of them knew me well enough, and one look at my expression had them parting for me to pass. On the other side of the crowd, the asshat in the Jetta slowed to a stop. His darkly tinted windows would have been impossible to see through if I'd been human. I wasn't human. Not even close.
"Nice driving, G," someone called. "Future champion of Baysmore, people. Let her through."
I ignored the comments from the regulars, glaring at the Jetta as I stalked closer.
"Get out of the car,"
I yelled, slamming my palm against his hood as I rounded the front end. Several of the spectators followed, boxing me in between the Jetta and their nosy asses.
"What happened, G?"
a male voice called from behind me. Hector, always up in people's business. I ignored him and marched up to the driver's side door. When the punk didn't open it, I lifted the handle and yanked the door wide. It squeaked on its hinges, and I had to stop myself from pulling it clean off.
Whoa, you can't just... What the hell was that? I demanded.
A lanky guy with bad acne unfolded himself from the front seat. He towered over me by at least a foot, his expression somewhere between shocked and pouting.
You could have killed me, I said. Or yourself. Are you insane?
He threw his hands up defensively.
Whoa, lady, I don't know what you're talking about.
I stepped closer, unmoved by his innocent act. Inside, my fey magic mixed with the swirl of creatures I was capable of becoming. Every one of them was pissed and straining to get out.
Don't play stupid with me, I hissed.
That kind of recklessness might work at your high school drag strip, but down here, we drive clean.
Look, it was an accident, okay?
You ever touch my car again with so much as a dirty fingernail, and I will rip your organs out of your asshole and...
Jim?
Juice's voice was sharp. I jerked toward the sound.
Give me a damn minute, I called. Now.
His tone was one I'd never heard before. That, more than the sniveling little schoolboy in front of me, had me stepping away.
Get out of here, I told him, disgusted. Don't you want me to settle up with the bookie?
He asked, wide-eyed.
I don't want your lunch money.
I shoved past him and over to where Juice waited. One look at his stricken expression and my stomach plummeted.
What is it?
I asked. Is it Z? Did he...
Not Z,
he said in a strained voice. Not that I could blame him. Z was my on-again, off-again boyfriend. Right now we were off again, and Juice was thrilled.
What then?
Mine had been the only race so far, which meant no one else could have been injured. Not unless I changed my mind about the punk in the Jetta.
It's your father.
Juice's voice was gentle, but his words were so unexpected, I felt only confusion.
My dad?
I frowned. He's not even here tonight. You know he can't come to these. A conflict of interest.
There was an accident, Jem.
I blinked. Thanks to the adrenaline still pumping through me, the words were taking longer than necessary to sink in.
What kind of accident?
Juice's mouth was drawn.
You should go home. Your mom is waiting for you so you can go downtown together.
A rushing sound rose up, blotting out the revving engines behind me as the crowd began to disperse, heading back to the starting line for the next round.
What kind of accident? I repeated,
voice rising. Juice hesitated. His eyes held the truth even before he managed to say the words.
I'm so sorry. Your mom said the agency just called.
Juice, what happened? I demanded.
He's dead, Jim.
I didn't wait until he was finished before sprinting back to my car. It was a mistake, a terrible, horrible mistake. He just called me not 10 minutes ago. Juice had bad information. I'd prove it. Gran was already ranting when I slid into the car and shut the door behind me. Ignoring her, I grabbed my phone, hand trembling.
Jem, what is it, honey?
Gran demanded.
Who are you calling?
I didn't answer. With a couple quick swipes, I dialed my father. It rang and rang before finally going to voicemail.
You've reached Vic Hawkins. I'm busy. You know what to do.
He sounded gruff, an attempt at tough cop that had made my mother and I tease him for days. My dad wasn't gruff. Not on two legs, anyway. His griffin side was another story, but that was a form he used for good. Everything about my dad was pure light. My hands and feet went cold as the truth of Juice's words finally sunk in. I hung up without leaving a message and looked down at my phone. My eyes caught on the notification I'd ignored before. I had a voicemail.
Jem?
Gran's tone was more urgent now, more worried. 1 second, I whispered. Juice walked up, his expression wary and full of empathy. I hit the button to lower my window.
Jim, go to your mom, Juice said gently. She needs you to go downtown to identify his...
Don't say it. Part of me still wanted to believe this was all a terrible mistake. Someone had decided to play a prank, or maybe he'd just been injured. But deep in my gut, I couldn't shake the throbbing pain that grew steadily bigger as it wiped out the doubt. Juice didn't try to stop me as I started the engine and threw the car into reverse. Squealing tires, I backed up and then slammed it into first, peeling out as I headed for the main road.
Damn it, Gemma girl, tell me what's happening right now, Gran demanded.
I didn't answer. I couldn't. If losing Grandpa Cal had forced Gran into this form, what would losing her son do? In my rear view, Juice watched me go, sad and solitary in the darkness. Refusing to let my emotions take me over, I kept my eyes on the road as steadily as if this were another race. At the finish line, my parents would be waiting, my father's happy smile the prize. He had to be okay. He had to be alive. I didn't want to imagine what I'd do if he was gone. Chapter 2. They called it a fluke. Some prick of a demon, level 1 supposedly, had caught him off guard while out on patrol. Vic Hawkins, the most decorated agent in the entire Supernatural Security Force, the soup who'd vanquished more demons in his career than any other agent on the force. Maybe he'd been distracted, they said. All I could think about was that phone call I'd ignored. For 4 days, my mother and I camped out at headquarters while she sat through debriefs and questioning about my dad's last days. He'd left notes about a big find and a demon problem unlike any we've ever seen. No one knew what it meant, but all the higher-ups treated us like criminals for the questions those notes raised. No one seemed to care that while they'd lost their best agent, my mother had lost her mate. Faye took a hit like that especially hard. By day 5, I saw the process for what it was. An interrogation. When I realized it, I marched in with Gran in my pocket and took my mother home. The funeral arrangements had been handled for us with no consideration for what we wanted, for what Dad would have wanted. Human heroes who were killed by the enemy got a flag and a 21-gun salute. The soups in charge of sending my dad off into the great beyond had given us a racist preacher with a reputation for inciting violence against anything non-human. The fact that they'd selected a priest who clearly knew about our kind and despised us despite the good we did for humans made my rage even worse. Maybe I'd wake up one day and find I'd become a Junebug too. So far, though, I was still me, Jem Hawkins, daughter to the deceased, granddaughter to a mourning beetle, the only creature in this world my mother trusted, and all of us were being watched. During the processional from the church to the cemetery, I told myself the sensation of eyes on my back stemmed from the other mourners hoping to get a first-row seat to my meltdown. But by the time the priest had begun reciting the 23rd Psalm, I knew it was more than that. When we all stood to sing Amazing Grace, I glanced over my shoulder. There, a dark suit half hidden behind a tree several yards to my left. As my gaze swung back to the priest, I faltered. Another suit, huddled behind a mausoleum decked out in cherub sculptures. And when I twisted to take in a full scan of the parking lot, 3 more. Agents. Because, apparently, ridding the city of demons wasn't as much of a priority as spying at a funeral. Why the hell they felt the need to hide was a mystery. My mother's sniffles called me back, and I straightened, tightening my grip around her waist. Around us, the guests murmured the lyrics, and my mother's lips trembled as she tried to join them. From inside my mother's purse, Gran sniffled too. I glared at the priest who'd ignored my song choice in favor of the hymn we all sung now. He met my eyes and smiled tightly, then finished out the song. At his direction, we all sat again, and he launched into some diatribe about the dangers of cavorting with demons on a daily basis.
I'll give that ass-muncher something to cavort with.
Gran's voice at my ear startled me. Shh, I told her, eyes on the priest still ranting passive-aggressively at our kind. Beside me, his wife, a plump human woman with a shrill voice, patted my hand as if to remind me not to end up like the deceased. It took every ounce of self-control I had not to shift right in front of her. I'd go with a giant worm, or maybe a slug. Something with lots of slime and goo. Picturing her reaction when she saw what I could become was a small comfort.
Corinthians says, "But the sacrifices of pagans are offered to demons, not to God, and I do not want you to participate with demons."
The priest shot me and my mother a pointed glare.
"You cannot drink the cup of the Lord and the cup of the demons, too. You cannot have a part in both the Lord's table and the table of the demons."
"I'm gonna pray for him," Gran muttered. This time, I didn't shush her. This funeral was bullshit. Fake people using fake words to convey a fake sense of comfort. The only real thing amid the mountains of roses and somber-faced agents was my mother's sniffles. Even those were muffled for propriety's sake. Screw propriety. I was stone-faced, and not because I wasn't crushed. My grieving just happened to contain a deep layer of rage I hadn't yet found the bottom of. And if Gran's mutterings were any indication, I wasn't alone in my rage. While Gran mumbled about the vengeance of the Lord, I focused instead on the smooth walnut finish of the casket. It was half covered by a cloth adorned with the seal of the Nephilim, a symbol of the strength that had failed the one man it should have stopped at nothing to save. The supernatural security force had let him die on duty, and his murderer was still out there, while all of them sat here, doing not a damn thing about it. Well, unless you counted footing the bill for funeral decor one might find on the clearance aisle. It was a slap in the face, one I hoped my mother hadn't caught on to. Finally, the priest finished his lecture and instructed everyone to bow their heads. I lowered my chin, and the back of my neck prickled. Glancing sideways, I paused at the sight of a figure along the edge of the looping driveway that bordered the burial sites. Even from here, I could tell he was male. Broad shoulders, dark hair, and fiercely intent on our little gathering. He wasn't in a suit like the other lackeys, and he didn't scan the area for unseen threats like the others did. I blinked, using my fey senses to hone in. His face was still too shadowed to make out, but his eyes, those were sharp and mysterious, and if I wasn't mistaken, locked on me. What the hell? Who would come all this way just to watch from the tree line? Z, maybe, but the mysterious stranger lurking at the fringe wasn't Z. He had a different sort of energy about him, less slick, more dangerous. Besides, Z was currently not returning my texts. Jerk. The prayer ended. Fabric shuffled as the priest dismissed us and the guests began to rise. Gran returned to my mother's purse to wait it out. My mother took a steadying breath, and I turned my attention back to her as we rose to meet the well-wishers coming to pay their respects. The next few minutes were filled with murmured reassurances and careful hugs. Some of the faces were familiar. Our neighbor Carmen, who sometimes played bingo with Mom, Lila from the sandwich shop where I'd worked for the past 4 years, and Juice, my mechanic. "Hey, girl." He pulled me into a one-armed hug, then hugged my mom more gently. "Thank you for coming," she said.
"Vic was a good guy," he told her.
She offered a watery smile and patted his arm.
"Call me later,"
he told me. I nodded, and he walked off slowly, hands stuffed into his hoodie. Beyond the few friends, most were strangers to me. Acquaintances and friends of my parents, my dad's bowling buddies. Finally, the crowd began to thin.
"Cora,"
a male voice called out. The line of well-wishers had dwindled until the strange man smiling down at my mother was the only one left. Beyond him, a small army of suits stood scattered around. Every one of them watched our exchange like we might take him out at any moment. Agency guys, which meant the suit before me was someone important. Good. Maybe he had answers. I noted the dark eyes and hard features that made up his handsome face. Attractive, but dangerous. My magic crackled at his proximity, and I fought the urge to step between him and my mother. "I'm so sorry for your loss." She smiled tightly back and let him take her hand.
"Thank you, Raph. It's good to see you."
"I only wish it were under better circumstances." She didn't offer an answer, only paled at the mention of what had brought us together. He brushed his lips over her hand, then released it, turning to me.
"You must be Gemini. Your father spoke highly of you."
The weight of his gaze rooted me.
"Gem, this is Raph Seal," my mother said quietly. "He worked with your father."
Raph Seal smiled in a way that made my stomach tighten. I shook his offered hand and shuddered at the zing of power that came with his touch. Something in his eyes flickered. Raw power. Nephilim, I realized, dazed by it. I'd never touched one before, never been this close. No wonder my magic was on high alert. I could practically smell the otherworldliness of him.
"Your father was a good man," he said.
The words were enough to wake me up, remind me why we were really here, who Raph Seal really was.
"Does that mean you're going to catch who killed him?"
"Gem," my mother whispered. "Now's not exactly the time."
"Girl's got a point, Cora."
Raph's forehead crinkled in confusion as he searched for the source of the voice. My mother's face flushed. She gestured to the purse.
"My mother-in-law is tired of the bull shrimp,"
Gran said menacingly. Or as menacingly as a Junebug could be. My mother looked horrified, but Raph shook his head.
"It's fine, Cora. Of course, you all want answers. So do we."
He turned back to me, his expression bland as if placating a child.
"The investigation is ongoing, which means I can't say much, but we're doing everything we can."
"Not everything," I said. And he frowned.
"Excuse me?"
"There was a witness. I read about it in the report the coroner shared with us." His eyes narrowed, then smoothed again.
"The witness information was redacted."
"I unredacted it. With magic. I left that part out." When he didn't answer, I pressed on.
"Anyway, like I said, there's a witness, but no one has located him or her. Maybe if more resources were diverted to finding whoever this person is, we'd get a lead."
"Unfortunately, the witness you read about was the victim of a ratademon 2 nights ago.
"How convenient."
The Nephilim's smile turned sharp. Behind him, a couple of the goons took a step closer, and I realized even my small pushback was more than Raph Seal was used to allowing.
"Your enthusiasm for the investigation is admirable, Miss Hawkins. I can assure you we have our best agents already working around the clock to track down the demon who did this."
I didn't bother putting words to the fact that there'd been zero evidence on his body of a demon being the murderer. Demons ripped or clawed or chewed. Not a trace of any of those things were visible when we'd gone to identify him. And according to the coroner's report, also magically unredacted by yours truly, there hadn't been a mark on him when he'd been found. But clearly, the SSF had already made up its mind about what they wanted to believe, or wanted us to believe. Raph Seal was no exception.
"Cora, why don't you let my men escort you home? You look exhausted after today's service. I hope it wasn't too much, but we wanted to do everything we could to help lay Vic to rest."
"Who could rest with that priest railing on against abominations?" Gran said.
I gave Raph a hard look. The service was beautiful, my mother said, cutting me.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?